today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey everybody, time for another Code Pen Radio. This time we have a special guest joining us, not an employee of Code Pen, but someone we hired at Code Pen. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that normally we kind of, we do that once in a while. If there's somebody who can help us do something at Code Pen to, I don't know, make Code Pen better in some way, usually we're not afraid to make that happen. And in this case, it was really the sweet spot. I feel like this was one of the more perfect opportunities we've had to reach out to somebody to help us with something that desperately needed doing. And I won't hold you in suspense any longer. I have with me some of the regular characters: Tim Savitt.
Hi there.
Alex Vasquez.
Hey everyone.
We're the three founders of CodePen who hired Mr. Josh Long, who joins us today. Hey Josh.
Guys, actually it's Josh Wood.
Oh, why? That was an incorrect in our show notes. I'm so sorry, Josh. I know a guy named Josh Long now. There's another guy out there in the web community.
Maybe that's how it got into the notes.
Yeah, perhaps it is. Josh Wood. Sorry, Josh. Where do you live, Josh?
I'm in Vancouver, Washington, which is right next to Portland, Oregon.
Oh, nice. Ah, right on. Yeah, right. Across the border there. I used to live in Portland, and I heard there was a trick where you could live there, but like do your shopping in Portland or something, and then like pay no taxes either way.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. There's no income tax in Washington.
Yeah.
And so, well, state income, federal,
and no sales tax around in Oregon. So
exactly.
Clever trick. Okay, so we know Josh Wood from, it says you're from Hint Media, but I recognize the name Honey Badger as we literally use it on CodePen as a an error. This is our error tracking tool of choice on CodePen, and you're the creator or one of the creators?
Totally. Yeah, I'm one of three co-founders. Actually, I was reading your CodePen bios. We have a lot in common with you guys. We're three equal co-founders ourselves. We all worked together before launching Honey Badger, and we're also a developer tool. So,
cool.
And have one third of our foundership in the Pacific Northwest.
Exactly. So small world.
So what's the, can you make sure our audience knows what Honey Badger is and stuff? Do you get the little pitch for that?
Sure, yeah. Honey Badger, we're at honeybadger.io, and we are a exception tracking and web application monitoring service for Ruby, primarily. We do other, we have other language support, but from the beginning, we've kind of, we're Ruby developers ourselves, and so we've kind of made that our niche focus, and we're really passionate about making an awesome experience for Ruby developers.
So, like, if our app 500s or something, which I literally had one today, there's a little kind of sucky user-facing 500 error at the moment for a particular scenario. We'll see it. Like, whatever. It throws on the Rails stack somewhere. And the users certainly see it because we have a special template that shows it and says, oh, we're so sorry, there's an error and stuff. But how do us developers know about it? I don't know. We're going to need some way to know. You could set up your Rails stack to, like, email yourself or something, but that's pretty janky, right? Isn't that what Honey Badger is all about? It's like it tracks that stuff and gives us more information and a nice,
Back in the day, the pretty much standard way was to install a gem. I think it's called the exception notifier gem, and it would just email you every time there's an error. The problem is that you get, if you have the same error over and over with, the massive amounts of traffic that I'm sure you have at CodePen, you would soon realize that's a lot of emails, and it's really hard to dig through all that. So Honey Badger basically is a service on top of that. That instead of emailing you, we send it to our API, and then we do some deduplication and kind of group a bunch of related stuff together, and then we'll notify you in any number of ways. That could be email, or that could be to your Slack channel, or HipChat, or wherever, or we could even automatically create a GitHub issue for your team to take a look at.
I can tell you that it's invaluable. Like, not only developers use it here, but Marie, who works in support, also will, like, dig through Honey Badger, and she's, like, superwoman with the filters and stuff, trying to figure out what user it happened to and when. It's like a tool we can't live without at this point.
That's awesome to hear. That's what we like to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does. Marie's like, oh, there's a problem. This is how you recreate it. And not only that, here's the link, because every error has like a URL in Honey Badger, so you can send somebody to write what you're looking at. Well,
it's
which
really
is pretty cool.
Easy to share.
Yeah, URLs, man. They're the future of the web. I'm telling you. It's really cool.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys too, but you know, being developers and having a developer tool, we use Honey Badger ourselves all the time. That's actually why we initially created it. And so we're a big fan of the dog fooding concept, where, you know, we're basically using what we make all the time, and mm-hmm. that kind of makes us want to put more effort into it.
Yeah, it's a perfect app for that. It's awesome.
Should see Tim's CodePen account. It's just overflowing.
I have at least 16 pens, yeah.
Interestingly enough, we're not even necessarily here to talk about Honey Badger, although maybe we could have an episode about that type of stuff in the future. This is slightly different in that Josh does some specific kind of consulting work as well, which we found out by, I think Tim gets Ruby Weekly, some kind of email newsletter, which is funny because I get tons of those for like front end stuff. And I guess I should have known there's like all kinds of these newsletters and stuff for back end people. I just checked out the website. It looks just like the, you know, JavaScript Weekly and stuff that I get. But Josh, you must have pulled out an ad in it or something and says, hey, we're willing to do some kind of specific work. And that specific work in this case was helping people upgrade their Rails apps. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly. We took out our first ad in April, I think, and then did another follow-up ad in May.
Advertising works, apparently, because Tim saw it, or Alex saw it, somebody saw it, and was like, you know what? We're on Rails 3.2. That's apparently going to be end of life, which to me is sad. I was like, really? Gosh, it feels like we just installed. What's going on here?
It happens fast.
Yeah, it happens fast. And EOL is like bad news. It means we don't get security stuff. And of course, we have to take security super seriously and stuff. I'm probably not the one most qualified to talk about this. But the point is, we decided we should take Josh up on this and get going on that. Maybe, Tim, you could share that story a little better than I can.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's like you said, I check out Ruby Weekly and particularly the In Brief section, and they kind of mix ads in there. And I saw the stuff and I'm like, this is the perfect thing for us to consult on, because honestly, this moving us from 3.2 to whatever we eventually make it to does not move the ball down the field at all for us from a product standpoint. Like, sure, we don't want security hacks to or security vulnerabilities, but also when we're done with this upgrade, if we did it right, no user will even know that we did this. So this is the perfect thing to like bring a consultant on for, because like, you know, we can be building user-facing features, and Josh can be working super hard in the background to get stuff like this going out. And he specializes in this. This is like what his firm does at this point. So to me, this is a perfect use of our, you know, hard-earned dollars to put back into the company.
Our hard-asked-for dollars.
I was going to say, yeah, advertising really does work. We've done a lot of that at Honey Badger, and this is kind of my first foray into advertising for consulting services. I actually have a partner on my consulting company, which is called Hint. And so, yeah, like my thought was just that pretty much exactly what, you know, Tim just said is that, like, you know, there's a lot of companies out there with existing teams who are really busy and really, you know, like doing maintenance and software upgrades or Rails upgrades is not at the top of your list, even though it's essential to security and keeping your developers happy with the latest features and all that sort of stuff. So this just, it seemed to really strike a nerve and be what other people are thinking about too. So that was really cool.
Yeah, Josh, maybe you should explain that it's not only you guys offer not only consulting to get you to a certain place, but also sort of maintenance as well. That should be mentioned, I guess, right?
Yeah, we're working on like pricing and plans for that. But that's definitely where we want to go with this is, you know, we want to provide a ongoing service where we can kind of, you know, we're already integrated into your team now since we've, you know, we've done the hard work to get you to Rails 4.2. And so now the goal would be to stay on the latest version of Rails. So you're not stuck in the future, you know, with a super legacy version of your app. And that's where it really becomes painful, is when you have to, you know, do like, you know, two or three or four jumps in version. So it's a lot, you know, in the long run, it's a lot less painful to, you know, do this stuff incrementally as it's released.
I bet there'll be people out there doing like Angular 1 to 2 transitions and stuff like that too, because it's kind of one that's it's a little tricky, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, and it's a big help. I mean, even just in the move from 4.2 or from 3.2 to 4.2, we were able to start using some methods that are going to be in Rails 5.0. So it's like there's always this is, it's a little bit of a treadmill with software because it is, you know, it's possible that you're software just ends up going stale. So it's incredibly helpful to be on the latest greatest because documentation is being written for it. It's being updated all the time. I've already found it like such a huge help to be on the latest Rails. It's huge.
Yeah, it's pretty nice to be able to look something up on Stack Overflow and like have someone give you a recommendation for a method to use that actually exists in the version of Rails that you're using. That's pretty good.
Yeah, you end up having to kind of like query based on dates. And, you know, when you start looking for stuff in 2014, it gets a little worrisome.
Yeah.
I like to recap on the why we did it. It was that we're on an old version of Rails that's being end-of-lifed. So it's kind of like that sucks for security. But that was the negative. All the positive versions is we get access to new methods and stuff. Presumably it's a little faster. Presumably the docs are a little better. Presumably we read blog posts about new Rails stuff and we can actually use it and take advantage of it and things like that. So there's a lot to get out of it. So it was not only a sweet spot in that we could hire someone to help us get there, but we didn't have to... I don't know, Tim, we didn't lose you for 2 weeks doing it too, because it probably would have taken you longer because, you know.
Oh, man, it wouldn't have been 2 weeks for me. Josh, how long, do you know how many hours you put in on this?
Yeah, I actually, you know, the process itself took longer than a week, which is what we had originally settled on, billing-wise anyway. But I had originally thought it might take a little bit longer in billing hours, but I came in pretty close to that 32 hours that I originally had estimated. I think it was, you know, it might have been a little bit over, but not by much. So yeah,
32 hours of somebody who's done it before and knows right. What they're doing.
Yeah, take that and multiply it by 3 for me. That really would have taken a lot longer, and I would have not found as many. Like, we would have had more bugs, and I would have had to research how to fix them. When we came across stuff, like for example, we were hard coding the assets path in there, and like you knew exactly what was going wrong, exactly where to fix it, and like had us back up and running in moments instead of me like digging around in documentation for ages.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, to that end, we're building, you know, our own internal wikis and, like known issues lists. And basically we're documenting everything that we see and that we have seen in the past. So I know that we probably put a few things, added a few new things to the list, with the CodePen upgrade, but you're right. We did have a lot, you know, we have seen a lot of this before. And I think that really is, one of the major values that we can provide is that, we've just, you know, not only are we going to be faster at doing the actual work, but we can, hopefully be more reliable in rolling out the changes. You know, we know some of the things to look out for when you're deploying changes and that sort of thing. So.
Okay, so we covered, you know, why and what we got out of it. We didn't mention the fact that I think the newer versions of Rails probably take more advantage of Ruby 2, which we're also on, but we were on that slightly before we started this upgrade. So that would have been a prerequisite, but I think that prerequisite was already good to go.
Yeah, we're working on 2.2, I think, yeah.
2.2, which is Rails 5 should work on, so we're happy, we're good, because 5.0 is going to come out, right? It's in RC right now, and
should be right around the corner.
Yeah, Josh, are you on some sort of like special secret mailing list? Can you tell us the actual 5.0 release date?
You know, no, unfortunately not. I'm with the rest of you in suspense.
Hopefully it'll be good. I know the least about it, but I'm sure it's all kinds of exciting.
Josh, maybe do you know like what to expect out of this? I know, is it Action Cable or whatever is one of the big ones people talk about? What's going on with 5.0?
I think Action Cable is the biggest feature of it that I've heard about, and that is basically a way to send some live updates to your Rails front end from the back end without doing any sort of polling or reloading the pages. which can be really cool. Like, for example, one of the things that we plan to do in Honey Badger is we'd like to be able to show when you're on the error list, you want to see if a new error has come in without, you know, without having to refresh the page. And so one way that we could do that would be just to, you know, send a message to the browser and tell it that there's a new error, and then maybe it would just tell you, hey, there's some new information, the page is out of date, so you should refresh it, or we could even just update the list automatically.
That's funny, because it's like, why is that a Rails feature? Because it's basically WebSockets, right?
Yeah, on the back end, it's using WebSockets. You can accomplish that already with other services, or even rolling your own. You can write your own WebSockets, or you could use a service like Pusher, for example. That we use Pusher for some things already. So that would be another way to do it. But you know, Rails bringing it into the core kind of gives it, you know, it gives it the typical the Rails way to do it, which can be probably a little bit simpler for the average user.
Our very last podcast before this one, I think, is the order that they're going to go out. We talked a bunch about React, and we have some new stuff going on in CodePen land that we're writing in React. So I guess it might be worth mentioning to the people following along out that they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, and that we're going to have some new stuff on CodePen that's in React land, but like it kind of is also still Rails land. Like it's going to hit a route or whatever that goes through the Rails stack and is managed that way in some world. So it's kind of, I don't know, at least the way we're going right away, Rails is going to be sticking around on CodePen for probably probably quite forever.
Yeah, it'll be a little while. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting to a day when like Rails provides basically the API and you guys are writing all of your logic on the front end, and that's cool with me. But I think we're a long way from that right now, and I don't know if the 5.0 is like going to change any of that. I think this is just another.
We're just not going SPA, you know, or whatever, right? Single page app. We're doing the everything else in React in some pages, so like some Redux stuff and whatever, but not routing. That's still a Rails thing. So okay, so we decided to go for it. We decided to hire Josh. You know, we upgraded, we downgraded $5,000. Oh. That was just because I feel like that might be worth people. Yeah. which was a totally reasonable cost for a super high-end developer to work on our stuff. People just like to know that kind of thing. That's what this podcast is all about. So sure. Out with the dollars. That was kind of a, you know, I don't know, possibly a friend deal kind of thing. So don't expect Josh to honor that cost necessarily for every single company in the world out there. So, you
that's
know.
That is our that is our that's our weekly rate per developer, and when Tim and I had originally talked, you know, we talked about how, like, you know, you guys kind of wanted to keep the budget to around a week. I took a look at your code base, and I was happy with what I saw, so you know, I figured we could give it a try, and it ended up working out pretty much to, you know, pretty close to that original estimate, which was awesome. But yeah, these projects, you know, a week is probably pretty optimistic for most Rails upgrades, especially from going from all the way from, 3.2 to 4.2. That's actually three incremental upgrades in between. So there is a fair amount of work to it.
Yeah, our big deal, or my main thing, was fixed cost. Like the idea that, you know, it's going to cost one price and we're not going to get shocked by it in the end. I'm glad it kind of worked out. I think I kind of like twisted your arm a little bit, trying to ask you to give us like a solid number, but I'm glad it kind of worked out so that you weren't working for like 2 months for $5,000 or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy with that too.
That's tricky. I can say though, as a buyer, it does feel better to know what you're getting into when you start. You know, ask the person doing the work to kind of take the risk, and hopefully they know. They know how to budget those kind of things. So, okay, so we did it. It's done. It's out. It's live. I'm sure everybody's exciting. Like Tim said at the beginning of the show, users probably don't see it. It's mostly for us. It's mostly for the future of our company and stuff. All went well, right? Except for what? A few things?
Alex, I'm going to throw this to Alex because I basically got us to I got us close to the finish line, and Alex carried us all the way.
Yeah,
there.
You know, what's funny is that in the upgrade, the things that went wrong was when we did something really wacky that wasn't even standard for Rails 3.2 0.2. We had been doing some really unique rendering of our emails, where we were like including helpers and modules from that were actually parts of like controllers that we didn't necessarily understand. And so one of the things that went wrong is the images in our emails broke. That we could still send the emails, but it was something different about the behavior in rendering a template outside of a controller that was breaking that we were able to do before we weren't able to do now. And the cool thing is there's actually a way in Rails 5.0 that's kind of been standardized for rendering templates outside of a controller. And we were able to use that because at that point we were on, it's been backported to Rails 4.2. And because of that, I was able to use it from the beginning. So when I fixed that error, I was able to use something that we'll be able to use going forward. And that's kind of one of the, even though it was frustrating to like discover that and have to rewrite that logic, it's really cool to see that you're able to use what the community is supporting today. And it's incredibly helpful. And it's nice to create code that you know is going to be around for quite a while. I don't know how long Rails, like a major release is around, Josh. Do you know, do you have any idea? Like how long can you normally stay on a major version? I mean, we were on it for years.
Yeah. You know, I, off the top of my head, I forget the exact policy, but you know, I want to say at least a couple years. They usually kind of keep at least two or three versions around, under official support. And then, you know, one, they'll typically move, you know, the last one, but you know, gets bumped down to just, you know, critical security patches or bug fixes, and then eventually gets dropped from those even.
Yeah, I mean, and so we experienced that error, and it was a silver lining because honestly, that code was just, it was the kind of code that had gotten so old and unknowable that I was scared to touch it. So when we got to the point where it was broken, I was like, well, it's already broken, so I'm not that scared anymore. So we were able to fix that. And then the second error that we ended up experiencing was really odd. It was something to do with the way we cached a user object. We were pulling a user object out of cache. And then when we attempted to update that user object in the database, it wasn't saving and it wasn't throwing any errors. It just was basically, it was as if Rails could not detect that the user object that we had pulled out of cache had dirty attributes that needed to be saved. And it was only happening in that one instance. So we just ended up getting rid of our non-standard caching that we were doing, and using all standard Rails calls, and everything started working. So a lot of the errors that we ended up picking up after it went to production were related to us just doing something completely off the books. I don't know if Tim told you, but Rails, this was our first Rails project. It's the first time we even used the Ruby language. So we did a lot of weird things in the beginning. And some of those things were still around when we did this move.
Yeah, I feel like we're teasing out like a lot of the sort of anti-patterns that we were doing. Over time, we just find them because they all break in situations like this. And so, you know, as we move forward, hopefully we have fewer and fewer of these accidents.
Doesn't it? It's always like if we did some weird thing where we tried to like do it our own way and then we ultimately switched to doing it the Rails way, it's almost like it's always better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Rails way works very well in Rails.
Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing about taking on any new framework is, a lot of times you should do things based on faith, even if you don't understand them, if that's kind of the standard that framework has kind of set out for you. And when we started with this, we were fighting it. I felt like I was fighting it the whole time. I was trying to write things the way I used to write the PHP logic that we used to write in. And it was always a mistake. We've always ended up backing out and just kind of doing it the Rails way. So.
Yeah, good. And so upgrades like this, they trigger some of that stuff. They're like, hopefully this is just this total side project that just happens and nobody thinks about it again. But that's, you know, it mostly went like that with just a few minor opportunities to be like, okay, it's time to revisit this, you know, ancient part of the app or whatever and rewrite it, which ends up being kind of a benefit. Did we mention the logout thing? That was a little tricky because I think we screwed it up once and then we figured out how to do it. So we were able to do another upgrade without logging everyone out.
And that was the only time I like totally panicked on the project. and that was after the fact, so there wasn't much I could do about it at that point. But
yeah, what was the problem? Didn't it have something to do with secrets and where we were storing them or something like that?
Yeah, the problem was I think it's Rails 3.2.4.0. They changed the way that the session is encrypted, and they introduced a new configuration option called secret key base. And the prior option was called secret token. And so the upgrade process for that is to you keep your secret token intact for the upgrade when you roll out, and then you add a new secret key base, which is the new config option, and Rails will transparently update your sessions. But what I realized after the fact was that we had just changed the secret token to secret key base, which basically just Rails, you know, interpreted that as, you know, it's using the new feature, but it's not going to transparently upgrade the sessions, which resulted in some sessions being destroyed or all sessions.
Which is bad because it means that somebody's working on a pen, they think they're logged in, this happens, they go to hit save or whatever, and it turns out their session is invalid. So in our world, specifically in CodePen land, that means that like, oh, I see you're logged out, we'll help you, we'll save your thing as anonymous or whatever. So we heard nothing about it. So it wasn't like logout gate or anything at CodePen. Presumably a few users were annoyed or whatever, but not even enough for one person to write in. So we'll call that a win if that's the worst thing that happened.
Yeah, I'd say we lucked out on that one. And you know, that's one reason. Like, I'm really, you know, I'm probably more paranoid than most about deploying changes, running a service like Honey Badger, where if you deploy the wrong thing, you know, it's not just affecting you but potentially all of your customers. So you know, that's one reason I like really stress doing some QA or doing like a test deploy in an environment that's as near to production as possible. That could even be taking a taking an instance out of your load balancer, for example, and just trying to deploy there, and seeing what happens.
And so, for the record, yeah. we you gave us that advice and we disregarded it. So it should be noted that these problems might have been detected.
We don't do a lot of staging around here.
Yeah, Tim threw on his cowboy hat on that one.
Yeah, we're fine. We're fine.
it turned out all right, so we're all good.
Yeah.
And so for mostly went fine. What went right? I don't know. I guess the notes here are that, you know, what was it like for a third party person to come in and see our code base and see our testing setup and see how we write Rails and stuff? Was it totally weird or?
Honestly, you know, I think you guys have done a great job with your Rails app. I've seen a lot of them, and yours was, probably one of the least, terrible ones I've seen, if that means anything to you. So yeah. There's a lot of things I like about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's least terrible is high praise coming from a developer. I think we definitely carry a chip on our shoulder because of it being our first Rails app, and we knew that there's still some warts and we're slowly working our way out of those warts, but it's good to hear.
Yeah, and I say this as someone who tells himself his own code is terrible like every day. So,
so many controllers. I'm just poking around in it like, what would it look like to look at this for the first time?
I think, you know, when it comes to upgrades, one of the great things I think that CodePen has going for it is that there were a few areas where you kind of hacked Rails or you know, used some sort of deep integration feature that was, you know, broke or transparently was hard to detect. But for the most part, you know, you've made heavy use of service objects, which I really like. It seems like, you know, a lot of your code is actually outside of Rails. So that can really help. The less you actually depend on really deep, you know, core Rails features, the better when it comes to an upgrade, because that's just, you know, fewer things that you have to go and dig up.
Oh, interesting. That actually is kind of contrary logic to what we were just saying, kind of, isn't it? That, I don't know, the less Rails you write, the better, in a sense.
Well, I guess what he's saying, in our sense, like we were using Rails, we were just using Rails features the wrong way. And what he's saying, and I guess like with the service object is we're able to build, like we're using just plain Ruby instead of like depending on, you know, Rails tricks to make things happen.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's fine to use Rails features in the way that they were intended to be used. That's exactly it. But you know, the more code that you have in just Ruby, the less code that you have to upgrade, essentially.
All right, cool. So it went right. It all went good. I'm sure you could suspect, listening to the show, we probably wouldn't have done the show if it was a huge disaster.
I wouldn't have done the show.
I like it.
Yeah, certainly not. So, Josh, how can people get in touch if they want to?
So you can check out upgraderails.com. That's our site for Upgrade Rails, and you can contact us through there. We have an easy green Upgrade My App button, and you can see a few of our other customers, including CodePen.
It's on there. Nice.
Yes. And then, of course, you can find Honey Badger at honeybadger.io, and we'd love to, if you use a Ruby app or if you use Rails or any kind of web application, really, and you want to track your errors or you're sick of getting thousands of emails and all that, then give us a try.
Awesome. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll talk to you all, CodePen Radio listeners, next time. See ya.
Thanks. See ya.
Seven six zero three one eight.